Good afternoon. It is One Bell of the Afternoon Watch, and I am trying to tune up my radio voice, but as you can tell, it is still not working as well as it should. And when I will talk just for a couple seconds about that when I get to the binnacle list. But first of all, my greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital, on the other side of the world, all of Captain Joe's people in between, those who live in such far-flung places as Maryland and Virginia and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Have I gotten all of the Commonwealths? And this comes to you from your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the magical isle of Vashon, broadcasting to you live, unscripted and unrehearsed, from the Gene Boss Studio, 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. The binnacle list has a couple of additions this week, including not myself. I'm keeping myself on it until I can tune up my radio voice. But I am doing much better. But in the meantime, I have to add my friend and colleague and much trusted aviation advisor, Captain Truman O'Brien, to the binnacle list, because now he is carrying this RPV or whatever it is. I tried to assume responsibility for passing that on to him, but he refuses to allow me to do that, saying instead that I was sitting much closer to attorney Craig Bellis when we did our broadcast last week, and Craig is waltzing around the magical isle with absolutely no symptoms at all. And so Truman is believing that he picked this up instead in our local post office. Apparently, he went to accept a parcel at our post office and was also handed the SPQFM or RPV or whatever it is. It is not, by the way, COVID. We both of us have tested negative for that. So for all of Captain Joe's people who remain on the binnacle list, it is my wish, my hope, and my command that each one of us, all of us, are following the instructions of our medical practitioner. And in the case of RPV or RSV, there's not much you can do except take some of the stronger over-the-counter medications. I had one person who was in here with me just a little while ago. His medication of choice is Jack Daniels. And since I eschew Jack Daniels these days, although did not at one point in my life, I instead am using things like Alka-Seltzer Plus. Doesn't do much, but maybe it's fooling us into thinking it's doing a little bit. And I have no friend on with me today, and so we're going to cover a number of different things that I've been saving up. And as always, it is my mission with this program for you to feel just a little bit better at the end of the half hour that you share with me, that you give me out of your life, and that you'll feel a little bit better about yourself and a little bit better about the world in which we live after we spend our half hour together. So in that frame of mind, and my frame of mind is really good, Truman is now telling me that he has almost no energy, but he was able to do his broadcast. I was able to do mine last week, but you force yourself up to the console to do these things. So I was sent a photograph during the week of a vehicle that my much-loved daughter-in-law has just acquired. And the photograph showed me not her at the wheels of this majestic vehicle. I will not tell you the brand or the make of it, but showed me the stern, and it showed me the license plate. It is possible in the state of Washington to get a license plate which has emblazoned on the left-hand side a number of different affinity connections. If you are a holder of the Purple Heart, for example, my well done and my well done to you, and gratitude that you came through that, because the Purple Heart is awarded only to those who have been wounded in battle by our government. So if you are a holder of the Purple Heart, if you are a holder of the Medal of Honor, if you are a Cougar, an alumni of Washington State University in Pullman, Washington, if you are a member of, if you are a veteran, there is a symbol for you, and there's also one for each of the military services. There is also one, and this is the one that Barbie has, a lighthouse. And you can declare your affection for and affinity for lighthouses in the state of Washington. When we first started issuing those lighthouse license plates, the State Department of Motor Vehicles alleged that the lighthouse was not Point Robinson Light. But if you look at it closely, as I have done many times, then you will see that it is so close to Point Robinson Light that I am declaring and proclaiming right here that if you own a motor car in or a sport utility vehicle or a truck, even an island truck where you may not keep up with the tabs, if you own any of those vehicles, or maybe even a cement mixer if you pull a cement mixer around, that you can get a license plate that shows Point Robinson Lighthouse along with a relatively low number, because there are not all that many people. And my son and my daughter-in-law live in Spokane, and lighthouses out in Spokane are really, really thin on the water out there. So you can get one. And then the question comes up, Captain Joe, we look at the stern of your vehicles and we notice that you do not have one. That is true. And the reason for that is that each time that I have acquired a motor car, for the last 10 of them, I guess, I did not get a new one, but I just transferred the plates over. But I'm on the search for a Mercedes to replace my S-Class that got destroyed by wiring eating animals out in my carport. And so I probably will go ahead and get a license plate with Point Robinson Light on it. Alas, those of you who drive motor cars in other states, if your state has such a thing, then I hope you will get it. But alas, you are not able to get one for the state of Washington. Another thing that came to me during the week was a photograph of dog tags that were worn by a Vietnam shipmate. That caused me to reach into my starboard pocket to reassure myself that my own dog tags were in my pocket. The dog tags that I was issued just before we deployed to Vietnam, I still have. And I still carry them, not as a good luck totem or not as a good luck piece, not because I'm concerned that should I be in any kind of an accident that I would not be properly identified, but more as a totem, a reminder, a connector to all of the people that I have gone to sea with, and in particular the people that I was privileged to command and the people with whom I went to war in Vietnam with the Coast Guard cutter Ingham, first as XO, and then when we came back I became her captain. So I reached into my starboard pocket, and I, at the same time, made sure that I inventoried everything else that I always carry in that starboard pocket. Sure enough, there was a knife. I always carry a knife. And I always now, in my personal checklist before I go through security in an airport, is to make sure that the knife that I have in my pocket has been taken out of my pocket and put into my checked baggage. Because I did not do this at one of my trips, and I had to leave behind a beautiful sailor's knife with a marlin spike on one end and a very sharp blade on the other. And it had rosewood handles. It was a beautiful knife, and I hope that that TSA agent that took it, and he was right to do it. I'm not quarreling or questioning with that at all. It was my lack of attention to duty that caused me to have to leave it behind. So always in my starboard pocket is a knife. Always in my starboard pocket are my dog tags. And now, just since Christmas, in my starboard pocket is a little tiny silver lighthouse. This lighthouse was a gift from one of my granddaughters. And it came with a little tag. And the tag said, "This is given to you because you judge not, you argue not, you just love a lot." And it seems to me today, it seems to me this very minute from the captain's chair, that those sentiments about which I do not always succeed, but coming from a granddaughter in her middle 20s who has experienced already some of the vicissitudes of life and about which we have talked, to have that as a present, merited inclusion in those things that will always be in the starboard pocket of whatever trowel the captain is wearing. Hannah Jean, I thank you for it again. In marine traffic today, I've had a succession of ships in marine traffic in the last few weeks, but they have always gotten underway before I got up in the captain's chair to talk to you. But today, there is a ship out on the federal anchorage just off of the deck of Captain's Quarters. And she has a wonderful name, and she is a very commonplace bulk carrier. And her name is the Samar Warrior. And she is under the Greek flag. And she is kind of a cookie-cutter bulk carrier. She's only 12 years old. She looks like she's considerably older. But interestingly enough, she has her hatch covers up, which tells me that she is at least hopeful that she's going to be able to get alongside the grain loading facility down in the port of Tacoma, and hoping to get alongside pretty soon. The other two vessels that were there and who took their departure just before I came on the broadcast were cars that carry only motor cars. And we've talked about them at some length on this broadcast because of my concerns about how they are loaded. We've had a number of accidents where they have rolled over. You all may recall that I talked about one named Golden Ray that rolled over in the approaches to Savannah. And in fact, Golden Ray could not be rescued. She rolled over with millions of dollars worth of very high-value motor cars, including Bentleys. And she could not be salved, and she had to be broken up and taken off in parts. So I always look at these ships, first of all, and also because they have a huge amount of windage, the flat sides against which the wind works when the wind is blowing. And so I always look at them with some degree of seamanlike and captainly skepticism about their overall seaworthiness. And I know that they would not be going to sea unless the calculations tell the marine architects, the naval architects, that the ships are safe. But they're safe only if they are loaded properly, and they're safe only if none of that load gets loose. And that's what happened with Golden Ray. She made a sharp turn, and motor cars came loose, and over she went. So we've had two of them on the federal anchorage. And I find that to be interesting, because what that tells me is that the flow of motor cars back and forth between the United States and the Orient is picking up again. Maybe that will mean that the so-called shortage of new motor cars will be alleviated shortly. Anyway, this bulk carrier, the Samar Warrior, is out there. Her original name, when she was built 12 years ago, when she was under the Panamanian flag, was New Venture. I love all of these grandiose names that they give to ships, which I'm sure that their captains love them. I'm sure their owners love them, because they're very inexpensive to operate. They have minimal crews, and they carry relatively high-value cargo. There was one of them that ran aground out in the Bosphorus a few days ago, ran aground, and she was carrying a cargo of peas. Imagine 45,000 metric tons of peas. What that would be like if she were to have opened herself up on that reef where she ran aground in the Bosphorus, and instead of leaking fuel, she leaked 45,000 tons of green peas. You all may remember that the Norwegian Navy, the Royal Norwegian Navy, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, more than that, 2018, the Royal Norwegian Navy ship Ingestad was in a collision with an oil tanker, and she was run up on a reef to try to save herself. She ended up having to be scrapped. There was no way that they could pull her off without ripping her bottom completely out. And so she was left up there and then was taken apart for scrap. As a parenthetical insertion, it is a terrible, terrible thing for a captain to see one of his much-loved commands taken apart for scrap. I saw some photographs of my Northwind as she was being taken apart, and I could see the outer skin had been taken off, and I could see into many of the compartments, and I knew every one of those compartments intimately. And it almost brought tears to my eyes just to see, because she had been such a wonderful command, a wonderful cruise, all the people that sailed in her, and a wonderful and sturdy and very reliable and most of the time predictable ship. So Ingestad had to be scrapped. And now, all of these years later, her captain is on trial for negligence. And he is being tried in a civilian court. Now, I don't know whether or not whether there is no such thing as military courts in the Norwegian military tradition. I would certainly have expected that should that happen in the United States, that anyone who would be brought to trial would be brought to trial in a military court, in a Navy court-martial. In any case, her captain is being tried in a civilian court for negligence. He's pleaded not guilty, and he's also pleading that he is being made a scapegoat. Awful word in the English language, scapegoat. Goats deserve more honor than that. In any case, that is part of his defense. However, his defense seems to me to be mitigated by the fact that the Norwegian government has already paid a fine, and the article doesn't describe any further to whom that fine was paid of 10,000 Norwegian crowns. Norway is one of those countries that is not in the Eurozone. And so the Norwegian government has paid 10,000 kroner, which is about $1 million. And by doing that, has accepted responsibility for the accident. We talked about this at some time and when it happened, and it always looked to me then and looks to me now as if the right person is on trial and that his defense is not going to do him much good. But as this plays out, I will report on what finally happens. On the 10th of January, I missed a big event. I missed a big holiday, unfortunately, it's not a holiday. But for those of you who have houseplants in your home, the 10th of January was Houseplant Appreciation Day. My book today is called Ghost Ship, and the subtitle is The Mysterious True Story of the Mary Celeste and Her Missing Crew. It's by Brian Hicks. And Brian also wrote as a co-author of the book called Raising the Hunley. Raising the Hunley is a really interesting book. Hunley was a submarine, or semi-submersible, I think would be more precise, that belonged to the Confederate States Navy. And the hulk has been found and was raised, and I believe is at the Maritime Museum in Newport News, a wonderful, wonderful maritime museum. In any case, Brian talks about the Mary Celeste, which was found with no crew but with a table set, and remains today one of the abiding mysteries of the sea. But what is interesting here is that he also brings in Clive Cussler. Clive Cussler, of course, is an author of many, many books having to do with, related to the maritime. And he has quite a bit to say about this particular situation, about this particular story. I'm not going to disclose what Brian Hicks' conclusions are, because I'd like those of you who are interested in my book reviews and my book recommendations to get hold of a copy of Ghost Ship by Brian Hicks, H-I-C-K-A-S. And you too will then know what Brian thinks happened to the Mary Celeste. There's been an article in Navy Times. You all know that I read Navy Times online religiously because it is one of the true, as well as much unbiased reporting of things that are happening in the Navy, the Coast Guard, and the Marine Corps. I've read the Navy Times ever since I was a fourth-class cadet at the Academy when I was 17, and continue to read it today. So it had a photograph in a recent online issue, and the caption of the photograph was Rust in United States Navy Ships. And it showed a truly disgusting photograph of a Navy destroyer in the Arleigh Burke class. Wonderful, wonderful ships. And it shows a truly disgusting photograph of the crew, a large part of the crew, standing around the entire forecastle, completely covered in rust. I'd hate to look over the side and see what kind of shape she was in on the side. The article goes on to say that the Chief of Naval Operations, who hopefully is coming to the end of his term, is saying what a shame it is that there are Navy ships that look like this. Admiral, I can tell you, from personal experience, from a personal command policy, from the ethics of my own command philosophy that no crew wants to belong to a ship that looks like Owl's Head. Owl's Head was, and maybe still is, the ship that picks up all of the garbage from Manhattan and takes it out to Hudson Canyon. I don't know. I doubt that they do that anymore. But when I was taking ships under my own command in and out of New York Harbor, going both to the old Coast Guard base on Staten Island and then to the Coast Guard base on Governor's Island, I would often pass Owl's Head as she was outbound, headed with a load of noxious substances headed for the dump area off of down at the bottom of Hudson Canyon, which is to the south of the entrance to New York Harbor. So no crew wants to belong to a ship that looks like Owl's Head. And even Owl's Head, her superstructure at least, was kept up. It's kind of hard to keep up the hull of a ship that carries garbage for a living. But my own personal policy was that I never took a ship back into her home port without making sure that she was at least presentable, regardless of how badly battered she might have been by whatever the mission had been or whatever the weather had been while we were out. I always had a place when I was home ported in Yorktown, Virginia. I had a cove that I would go in and drop the hook. We would put the boats over, and all hands would be over the side and at least scrubbing her down so that she would look presentable when we went back to our home port in Yorktown, Virginia. It is possible and unacceptable that crews today I don't know about the Coast Guard, because I can only judge from what I've seen. And what I've seen have been some pretty good-looking ships and well-maintained. But I look at the photograph of this particular Navy ship, and I say, what is the first lieutenant? The first lieutenant is the head of the deck department. It's his job to report through XO to the captain that that captain's ship is in top-notch, first-class, and Bristol fashion. And I just cannot imagine how that first lieutenant in that particular ship could hold his head up, nor the XO, nor the captain. My own command philosophy also was that I inspected from before I boarded my ship every morning. I inspected her from her jackstaff all the way aft, as far back as one could see, to the flagstaff, to make sure that there were no Irish pennants and that there was anything that the first lieutenant needed to give some attention to. So shame on the Navy if they are accepting this and the crews are not being put to work to take care of them, because nobody wants to belong to a ship that looks like Owl's Head. The last minute that I have, it is the Coast Guard budget for the proposed Coast Guard budget for fiscal year 2023, which has not yet been approved, includes the purchase of a commercially available polar icebreaker. I will be tracking this story because it causes me great alarm and great puckering. And so I'm giving you a little bit of a heads up that we'll be talking about this particular subject. But as always, we're far too quickly to the end of my time. This is indeed your Captain Joe. I'm up in the chair. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And as always, I am, with much love to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, I am on station and watching properly.